You're listening to Dots, Lines, and Destinations, a travel podcast with hosts Stephen Seagraves, Foz Mamoon, and Seth Miller.
Well, guys, it's episode 193 of Dots, Lines, and Destinations, and I'm here to lay down the law, or at least keep you in line.
Boo.
We got word that you guys were getting a little off topic. And
let's be clear, we might have been a little out of hand, but suggesting that we were off topic more than
just points
happens.
Out the normalcy. Just points out.
Yeah, okay. I'm not sure there's such a thing at this point.
Let's start off this week. A friend of mine, Patrick O'Keefe, who is I've known for a good 15 years, has been asking me about credit cards and what I would recommend he get. And the two that he's kind of looking at are the Amex Platinum and the Chase Sapphire Reserve. And his most recent email to me, if I can quote it quickly, is he says it kind of comes down to this. The Chase Sapphire Reserve has superior insurance, more flexible rewards, a lower annual fee, and a larger annual travel voucher versus wider lounge access with Centurion and Delta, because he's a Delta flyer, and gold status on Starwood, Marriott, and Hilton, and more credits with Uber. So where would you guys go and why on these two credit cards? If those were the two that you had to choose from, which one would you pick and why? Give Patrick a little bit of advice.
And also be a Delta flyer?
He does fly Delta every now and then.
What else? So being a Delta flyer to me – it might just be enough to tip towards Amex, just the points transfer in if you're a SkyMiles user particularly, right? One of my big pet peeves is people who are like, oh, I have membership in 18 programs and, 10,000 points in each, because that's the optimal earning for this random ticket was this new program that I'm never going to use again.
Yeah.
Versus, sure, you may earn 10% fewer points, but if you have 100,000 points, that's worth way more than 10,000 across 10 programs.
Yep, agreed.
And I think the one question would be, is he a Delta flyer or a SkyTeam flyer? SkyTeam, you can do Air France KLM through
Chase,
but you can't. So it gives you some options for SkyTeam if that's as important. But if he is truly, as Seth said, tied to Delta, then I would automatically go with the Amex.
Okay.
But, I think the other things he identified, I personally don't put a ton of value in the Uber credits, mostly because I don't use it.
Yep.
Uber very often. When I do need a car, I end up on one of the other various vendors usually. I think, would I change my patterns there for $200 of free? I guess maybe, but I don't know.
I think that's a good point. Like, I don't take Uber that often. I take Lyft most of the time, or I take a cab. So that I would drop that off my decision making.
Yeah, it's right. I mean, the value of free has to be calculated against what you would actually spend, not, just because it's got a value.
Yeah.
And the annoying thing about the Uber credits is they're only good in the U.S. So I mostly use Uber outside of the U.S. So the credits do me no good.
Okay.
I did not know that.
Yes.
Good to know. Because I'm in the same situation. I'll use it sort of as a last resort in places where other services don't exist. But
exactly.
I've actually started just joining the random ones in Asia when I've been over there. They seem to be pretty interesting.
The random Asia rideshare, car share?
Yeah. There's one called, there's a Grab, I think, which covers a couple countries in Southeast Asia.
Isn't that the one that was going to buy Uber's assets and then got blocked?
Probably. There's the Baidu, not Baidu. What's the China one? With a D, maybe?
I don't know.
Baidu is the search engine. Anyway, there's a Chinese one that I used, and it's actually, that one's interesting, and we're getting terribly off topic, so great job keeping us on track there, Stephen.
Hey, I'm letting you talk, man.
The one I used in China lets you hail even if you pay cash. Huh. So you can basically use it as a taxi hailing app, but it's such the destination. So when you don't speak the language and still need to get around in cities in China, it's really useful.
Yeah, that's really nice.
If the driver shows up.
Yeah.
I had some issues with that. I've had that issue everywhere with every program, it seems. Anyway, other value proposition, the insurance thing is definitely better on Chase. I don't know if I told you guys this. When I was coming down to Florida a couple weeks ago, my flight from JFK to Jacksonville canceled, and JetBlue was really good, rebooked me into Orlando. It was a quick phone call. They took care of me, but it meant a last minute rental car switch. And so my $30 rental car became like $100. And as a joke, I put in a claim on the Chase trip interruption insurance saying my flight was canceled. I was rebooked by the airline, but it got me in significantly later and with additional transportation costs. Here's the receipt. And they credited me the cost of the new rental car.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That's nice.
So I have no idea how or why, but after, especially after my chipped windshield I got into Germany with you guys, it took over a month and like several tries to fix. This one, they just approved it right away.
Wow. I think, you know, I've kind of looked at, I have the Sapphire Reserve, and then I use that with the Freedom Unlimited or whatever it is for everything else, because it's 1.5% back, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought about getting the Amex. The only reason I would get the Amex really is for Centurion and for some of the transfer partners that are unique to Amex.
Like the Centurion Delta. Lounges?
Yeah, the Centurion Lounges and some of the partners that are unique, like Delta. So, yeah.
But that's only good if you're flying Delta.
True.
Right? It's not like you can go into the Delta lounge when you're flying someone else.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, Patrick, if you're listening, I think that's a key takeaway, is you have to be flying Delta to use their lounge with the Amex.
Yeah. You know, I do see that, and, you know, I do know that Air France KLM Flying Blue is a transfer partner. With the new Flying Blue that either just started or we're in transition, right? They're switching. We've already switched earning and we're switching redemption this summer. I would be cautious there about investing much in moving points around.
Mm-hmm.
And with the fuel surcharges that they add on to a lot of the tickets, it's not as great a value necessarily.
Yeah. And I think
flexibility there.
Well, and so I think Foz, you know, you and I talked about the Amex, Plat a while back, and you said the booking engine that they have is much better for if you're going to book rewards directly. Yeah.
Well, if you're going to redeem the points for revenue tickets, the Amex booking engine is far and away better than the Chase one.
Yeah. I got screwed by the Chase one. Recently.
Yeah, it's not a good engine. And if you call, they're not the greatest agents, in my opinion. But
should we pull back up the episode about how much you hate people and talking on the phone, or should we?
Well,
insert cool story bro photo here.
the variety of Chase agents is very much all over the place versus the Amex agents. The Amex agents know how to book travel. The Chase agents are not that good at booking travel sometimes. Some of them, like I've had some really good lucks where I feed them the individual flights, I feed them the fare basis, and they'll do it. There's others where I'll say that and they have no idea what they're talking about, and they will just give me what their screen shows them.
Yeah.
And I've had them add a note to Steven's profile that he always gets the second type of agent.
If you just picked one right off the bat right now, what would you guys pick? Seth?
The CSR, unless there's a very, very specific driving factor for Amex. And I'll also say I discount lounge access probably more than I should. Mm. And we'll see how that changes as I leave New York City and have to connect more often.
Yeah.
But the priority pass when I need it has proven useful to me, or that I get with the CSR or some other things. I mean, there's also, should we touch on some of the changes that's coming to the Chase card?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, he's gotten an offer for the CSR, and I think that's what kind of, you know, he was reading about it. He got a 60,000 point bonus for the Amex Plat. So, yeah, we should talk about the changes.
Yeah. So they're apparently later this year, we're going away from unlimited guests with priority pass to only two.
Yeah.
Right. And like, I think the other change is the $300 travel credit you get used to actually still earn points, and it no longer will.
Not huge deal breakers, but
right.
Priority pass is big.
It depends on how you're treating, right? If you're traveling you or you and one other person, it's no big deal, or a couple people. If you're traveling you and a family of five, or you have a habit of walking through the terminal, corralling a dozen people and trying to drag them all into a lounge for random reasons, because, you know, you're a rebel like that or something, it doesn't work so well.
I'd like to take a moment and say thank you, you bloody for abusing that way too much. I heard way too many stories of, you know, and bloggers were so proud of taking dozens of people into the lounge on their priority pass. This is ridiculous. This is why we can't have nice things.
And you say I don't like people. Which one would you choose, Foz?
Fun. I name names at least.
I don't remember the names. I can think of someone we know, but they are not a blogger. So, I would probably pick the CSR. But the one thing that I will add is that if you ever have things that you need to dispute, Amex is so much better than Chase any day. Chase will basically after 90 days won't even open a dispute. Whereas, and Steven, you and I had this with that Aeromexico ticket.
Yep.
You opened the dispute, they didn't even challenge it. They credited your account and you were done. Whereas mine, they refused to do anything.
Yep. Two different scenarios.
Yeah. So if you have a need for dispute protection, nothing will ever beat Amex.
Yep. Well, and I was thinking if Patrick does go the CSR route, I was going to recommend doing the Freedom Unlimited and just use the CSR for food and travel. And then
for the 3X, the 3X categories.
Yeah, for the 3X points and then the 1.5 for everything else. I think that's like the best strategy because the Freedom Unlimited, you know, doesn't have a yearly charge. And if you balance it right, it's just like using one card, really. So
And you use the freedom, and then when you want to redeem, you transfer those points into the ultimate rewards account tied to the CSR.
Yep, exactly.
And so if you get 1.5 cents back on the sort of direct booking stuff, you're up to 2.25%, and everything else is, you know, pretty decent for, or, you know, or you're earning 1.5 cents per, or 1.5 points per whatever.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of the way I would go. I think the more I look at the Amex plat, I'm less inclined to take it.
Yeah.
So, well, thanks guys for the opinion. Well, I'll let Patrick know, and hopefully he listens to the show. Air France staff has rejected a raise, and their CEO kind of said, "All right, see you later."
He didn't have much of a choice.
Was he kicked out, or did he? Was he pushed
officially
out?
Officially, he resigned.
Okay.
I think it was his comment was he no longer, you know, he had been managing the negotiations on behalf of management, whatever. And his comment was, "I've tried," and this is not the first time this sort of thing has happened. But he did what he could do. He got, you know, to the end game. They thought a tentative agreement that had to be ratified, and then it was still rejected. And his comment was essentially, "I no longer have the necessary mandate to make this happen." You guys, I negotiated in good faith. We came to an agreement. You guys clearly still don't like it and don't agree with me. There's nothing more I can do here.
Wow.
And so they're going to replace, actually, I guess this coming week, by the time this episode goes live, I guess we should have a new CEO name announced. But
well, it's interesting. I mean, Bloomberg had an article which said, you know, this could be the end of Air France because, I mean, it seems like they might be the next Alitalia.
So it's interesting that you use those two sort of phrases back to back. It could actually be the end and not be an Alitalia.
Well,
the difference is that the government owns about 15% of Air France, but the transport minister, I think, or our finance minister, came out and said, and that was that quote, like, you know, the staff needs to take a good look in the mirror and decide what they want because we own a minority percentage here and we can't bail you out. We are not going to fund the collapse of Air France. So if they continue to reject these deals and they continue to strike and destroy the airline, like the strikes this year have cost them hundreds of millions, I think. It's been massive, massive costs, plus book, you know, not only just the cost of handling, but the booking away people, you know, choosing other airlines because they know the strike is coming. It's been economically disastrous.
Yeah.
The airline. And it can't last much longer. The difference being Alitalia, we say that about Alitalia all the time. The difference so far has been that Alitalia, the government was willing to give them that huge bridge loan and try to sort things out.
So if Air France was to go under at some point, who carries that load? You think Lufthansa Group buys them up?
Would you buy it if you had to deal with the same union problems? This is right. This is the whole thing about Lufthansa dancing around Alitalia. Also, they want the planes and they want the routes and the, you know, the authorities and whatever, but they don't want the contracts and the staff. The debates and the negotiations always been, what can we restructure as part of this transaction? You know, and it's the old company does all the restructuring, signs off on it, then immediately, you know, transitions. So there, it has to take, so to speak. But I don't know.
Could Lufthansa or BA, you know, IAG, potentially wait until they're not even for sale, they're bankrupt, shut down, and they're trying to unload assets. And some of those assets would be gates and routes and planes.
The Air Berlin model?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think you still have some foreign – do you have foreign ownership issues? No, because that's not an issue.
EU, yeah.
But you do still have to deal with the – if they actually shut down, it's, you know, they're so much bigger than Air Berlin that ceasing operations and trying to start back up again would be crazy. Also, if that happened, would someone try to capitalize KLM to bring it back and try to keep some level of competition in Europe?
Yeah.
Well, I guess that's the one question that I have is, what happens to KLM? Does the company declare bankruptcy and the Dutch government maybe buy KLM, or what happens? Right? Do they sell KLM?
I don't know.
I know
there's been a ton of concern about, could KLM get brought down by all of these problems? Because KLM is profitable and growing and way more successful financially, certainly, than Air France.
Well, they would have to get dragged down, right? Because they're one company.
So yeah, what I don't know is if it's actually one company or if it's a parent company and like sort of separate enough assets that they could stay, you know, isolated. I just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I mean, if they were smart, they kept the two airlines separate as part of Air France KLM, but these are the French we're speaking of.
Yeah.
Ouch, Foz.
But I mean, you have to wonder, like, you know, we've all been through De Gaulle. We all understand how massive it is. If Air France fails, what the hell happens to De Gaulle?
It all turns into T1. decrepit.
T1 is not that bad.
I do not. It is terrible. I don't know what you're talking about. It's beautiful architecture, but it's a terrible terminal.
I view it from the architecture perspective because it's so much nicer than T2.
Yeah,
in that T2.
Yeah, that's a good question. But T2 just sprawls, and the buildings are small and decrepit for most of them. And the ones where they're nice, they're just long and just massive. Whereas I feel T1 is an easier to navigate terminal overall.
I saw something the other day that said it was something to the effect of like essentially T2 at Charles de Gaulle will be 18 buildings all with the same name, and you'll still and it'll be like circles of hell, and you'll still never know where to go.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas T1 is just one circle.
with 30 different escalators.
Right now, it's like it's funny. I was just there last week, a week and a half ago. Like three of the pods, because I think there's 8 pods or 7 pods.
Yeah.
There's 3 of the pods are actually demolished and being rebuilt. So they are trying to clean it up.
But what are they doing?
I think they're just rebuilding the pods, maybe to be taller.
Okay.
I mean, the nice thing is if they rebuild the pods, right, they can then put lounges post security in the pods.
You're hilarious.
You really think that's going to happen?
Exactly. He's delusional.
It wouldn't be the first time.
You need to lay off the peyote.
To be fair, I have met with the guys from Airports de Paris and talked with them about it and some of the stuff. They're super happy with some of the very small changes they made about how connections work. First, I think it's transiting from Schengen to non-Schengen. You can now do it without having to leave security if you're in T2.
Hmm.
Good.
So there are some minor improvements that have come around. It's minor, but it was a huge construction effort to like build a tunnel essentially, or isolated walkway across a huge chunk of the buildings. But there's still weird stuff with like Terminal 2, Piers K, L, and M, I think, are like there's still weird stuff going on there with the transit and the tram that connects them and a lot of things. So they are doing stuff constantly, but it's hard to tell how much of it actually works.
$1 million question. But yeah. I mean, whoever thought that Alitalia would be the star of SkyTeam in Europe?
Did you see Alitalia announced flights to Malé, the Maldives?
Really?
Yeah, I saw that today.
On a 777 or on an A330?
I laughed that Alitalia was doing new things and stopped reading.
Oh, okay.
Is that just trying to so they can attempt to steal traffic away from Etihad?
Because they're bitter that Etihad finally gave up on them?
Yep.
Could be. Stupider things
like that. Hell hath no fury like an angry Italian woman.
Oh, man, we're bad. You made fun of the French and the Italians this episode. Pretty soon, no one's going to listen to us.
People do?
We have listeners? Wait, what?
It wouldn't be a Dots, Lines, and Destinations podcast without a little United talk. And the latest news was United decided to get rid of tomato juice on their flights. And people got out their pitchforks, their literal pitchforks, for the tiny olives and raised hell. And they're bringing it back. Bringing back the Bloody Mary mix.
It's tomato juice, not Bloody Mary mix. Those are two different things.
But it's the same thing, kind of.
No.
So when
Bloody Mary mix is based on tomato juice, but has other spices and flavors added.
So does United use Bloody Mary mix?
On board?
On board. Or they just used tomato juice?
They have both. They have both.
Okay.
Because they had both, and they only pulled tomato juice off, and now still had Bloody Mary mix, and now they're putting tomato juice back.
So right, because the Bloody Mary mix is like Mr. T's, and I thought it was Mott's tomato juice, but I could be wrong.
Is it Mr. T's or Mrs. T's? I think it's Mrs. T's.
Whatever. Mr. T? Does it wear a gold chain?
It could. It comes out a little blingy.
Yeah, pity the fool who tried to take away your tomato juice.
So what's the story here? Like, what's the reason?
I guess we have an episode name now.
Pity the fool?
Yes.
What's the reason, though? Like, is it weight? Just, extra junk on board?
I'm sure someone somewhere did a project that said if we remove these, and they also reduced Sprite Zero, so they did have, and that's sticking apparently. If we reduce the number of things we have to cater, we can have more of the other things and optimize and blah, blah, blah. And we say, joke earlier about the olive, but like there's some sort of optimization algorithm that says we save X number of dollars if we make this change.
Do you want
to
elaborate?
Someone tried that math and, forgot the whole, customers actually have opinions sometimes, part of the deal.
Would you like to elaborate on the olive?
Go ahead.
You got it.
No, go ahead.
So it's a reference to American Airlines way back in the day. And I think it was one of the old Bob Crandall cuts or changes that was made. And essentially, the salads used to have olives, which I'm glad they cut because I don't like olives. But I'm in the minority on that, it would seem. And, it was like 2 little slices of a black olive on the salads. But it's one of those things that if you multiply that by the number of salads served and this and that and the other – the cost savings of removing the olives I ended up having a whole lot of zeros on the end of that number. And I remember it was hundreds of thousands of dollars or even into $1 million or something like that. But when airline, you know, in an era when the airlines weren't nearly as profitable and all these other challenges, it turned out to be real money just by cutting the olives. And it's sort of used now as a stand-in or, you know, metaphor for any sort of cut that made a lot of sense from a budget perspective, but doesn't always please the passengers.
Well, and this cut from United comes along at the same time or around the same time that they announced shortening mealtimes again, right? So dinners, I think, won't be served on flights less than 3.5 hours or something.
4 hours, yeah.
Yeah, and unless it falls within a specific window or whatever. But I mean, even flying Alaska recently, I've flown a bunch of Alaska the last few weeks, and in first, like even their food has been much less. It's been much less food than typically served. And I just wonder, is this like the route we're going now? It's kind of like bottom of the barrel. Just put some crap on a plate and, you know, they'll like it.
Well, let me be very clear. We can always find something closer to the bottom. I think the airlines have proven that. We've had a little bit of a we've had a little bit of an upswing lately, and so going back down again isn't the end of the world.
Yeah,
is what I would say. But I do agree that the airlines are seeing challenges, and a lot of that right now is, you know, the idea of everything's great. Oh wait, oh shit! Like fuel prices are up.
Yeah, fuel prices are way up.
Fuel prices are up significantly, and the airlines have to figure out how to deal with that.
Right, but let's take a step back, right? In coach, meals aren't complimentary on pretty much most domestic routes.
Correct.
So that's a dynamic price they can adjust if they need to. If they need to add 50 cents, they need to add a dollar. That's fine. Where the only place they're catering fair meals, free meals, is first. And that's a very small percentage of seats. And they're nickel and diming 12 or 20 seats on a plane. What does it say about the grander picture? I think that's rather short-sighted.
It says that fuel prices are up and they're trying to make budgets work. And yeah, I agree with you. You know, yes, those are your premium customers, ish. Though I'll qualify premium. The prices for premium fares these days aren't that much higher than.
That's where I was gonna go. It was like now, so you've undercut the market with cheaper first class tickets, right? Domestically, especially.
So at least you're getting some money instead of just a complimentary upgrade.
Exactly, and because of that, now though, you're not making your margin is lower probably overall.
Okay, so on what I've seen on United key fares versus coach fare, and a lot of routes, there's about $100 on average difference at the bottom end to buy the key fare. For $100, what's an extra $2 towards the meal for something you were already giving that seat away previously?
I think part of the challenge is that $100 also has to pay for the extra real estate on board. That's the real problem. That's where the real.
But I don't think that seat was going to be occupied either way, right? You were either going to give it away to someone who was already sitting in the back, or you've monetized an extra $100 and not given it away.
I think Seth's like cursing under his breath.
No,
son of a.
I don't think that you necessarily have to concede that you gave it away.
I think that's part of the equation, but I don't think that's the full equation. I think there's other things that are factored in when figuring out that cost of the seat.
I mean, so my thought process here is one of the problems with meals and first as a whole is that there's a lot of stuff that, like, everything that gets put in front of me, I do not eat. I would much rather be able to pre-order something that I want and that I will eat all of it than getting a bunch of stuff where half of it goes back to waste.
That's a good point.
If the airlines got to be more efficient, they wouldn't have a lot of these problems and they'd increase customer satisfaction.
Absolutely. I'll 100% grant you that. And we've seen it, right? We've seen that in action. If you look at the American ability to run pre-ordering, Delta's doing pre-ordering better now. United still is not for reasons, and I'm sure there are terrible reasons, but they're still not doing it. And you do get when it works, when the catering gets it right, when the flight attendants get it right and all those things, passengers really are much happier. I think the reason always to not do it had been because we're never going to get it right, quite right. And they've proven still that it's not perfect, but it absolutely does make passengers happier when you can say, in advance, this is what I want for dinner on the plane, and it actually shows up in front of you.
Well, and more importantly, and this is the thing that, because American still, I don't know the best of Delta one, but the American thing is you still get two options, the same two options you would get on the plane, except for the addition of the fruit and cheese plate if you pre-order. I can go look at the menu ahead of time, and if neither thing looks appetizing, I can plan accordingly and show up on the plane with the meal or eat before I get to the airport.
Right, and just hope no one steps on your burrito.
Yes.
Well, details. And I'll say this. I mean, I think the reason United isn't really moving on this is they're too busy designing the new website.
Wait, there were designers involved?
Well, there's something. I mean, they took a CSS template from somewhere, and I've stuck it on another website.
You know, my favorite is it's just like Groundhog Day. You know, they redesign the front page, they redesign the booking engine, and then they go back to the beginning and forget all the other things. The change flights functionality is still the same thing as the old Continental engine from 10 years ago.
Oh, the view account page is the same thing we've had for forever.
Or view itinerary, except for a couple other upsell options down at the bottom.
Yep. Yeah.
So somebody is touching it, just not very much.
Lipstick on a pig.
So more United changes. They've announced that a few of the dirt strips in Mexico are losing service, and there are some reductions to San Francisco or to Mexico City as well. So I think LA Mexico City is going away completely.
Yep. So it's Denver Mexico City, which was only Saturday service, but
yep,
it's gone.
And then other services are being reduced. I think San Francisco's receiving fewer frequencies.
Houston's dropping a frequency.
Okay, but Newark is keeping one or getting
Newark's
rid of one?
Newark's adding one of the two LAs. Was LA two?
No, I thought LA was just one.
LA is one. So LA moves to Newark. Houston drops one daily. Denver drops its one weekly, and then to Mexico City. And then separate from that, there's a bunch of little strips that shift.
Yeah.
And I don't remember all. Mazatlan loses all service, I think. Leon, BJX.
Yep.
Loses its service, and then one airport's getting upgauged to an ERJ-70, though.
Oh,
that's
man.
Not all bad news.
Yeah, that's good. Lubbock doesn't even get an ERJ-70 yet, so.
And?
So.
It's Lubbock, man. Come on.
Amarillo does.
Right.
I think this is.
It's Lubbock, man. Come on.
This is.
Anybody want to go to Lubbock?
That's what I'm trying to point out.
That's where I went to school, guys. Come on.
Steven's not taking the bait. And I'm a little
I don't see you going to Lubbock at all.
Me?
Just because you went to school. When was the last time you were in Lubbock?
Probably 7 years ago. No.
Yeah, okay.
No, 4 years ago. I was there 4 years ago.
See, if you flew there a little more often, they might have a reason to upgauge it.
Yeah, just me. That's it.
The Steven demand factor?
I can fingers crossed that because LA no longer flies to Mexico, we at least get two a day to Portland. But I'm not going to hold my breath.
I also saw they're also dropping Newark, Des Moines.
I don't know whose loss that is, Des Moines or Newark's.
Well, Steven doesn't live in New Jersey anymore, so that's probably not
They're dropping Newark, Des Moines, they're dropping Newark, Baltimore, and they're dropping Newark, Hartford.
Hartford one's interesting.
I mean, they must just be ceding that traffic to someone else or letting those connections happen through Dallas or Chicago.
Yeah, weird.
I mean, westbound, it makes sense to run those through Chicago or Dulles. It's a little interesting that they're giving up on some of the transatlantic out of there, but I wonder if things like the Aer Lingus new 757 to Dublin eroded enough of the yields to Europe that killed it.
Hmm.
I mean, it's hard to believe that one flight could change that much, but well, I could almost believe it.
Doesn't Norwegian fly to Hartford as well?
Seasonally, maybe. But okay. Yes, there is some Norwegian service that touches it.
And I mean, I think there's enough overlap on the route network between Dulles and Newark to Europe at this point. There's not very few routes that do not fly to Dulles that fly out of Newark at this point.
Hmm.
So it kind of makes sense because it's probably an easier. They have less ATC delays because those are the flights that always get canceled or delayed.
Yeah.
So it makes sense from a flow perspective to push this through Dulles because you know those people will make it.
Yeah. The other thing to think about is we have to remember one of the reasons a lot of these short flights existed out of Newark was to squat on slots when slots were a thing.
Yep.
And slots at Newark are no longer a thing.
Very true.
So there's no reason to pretend. And right, they quote unquote operated the routes, but they ended up, those are the flights that got canceled all the time when they needed to, give things up for weather and whatnot because someone sneezed. And so I'm not sure that United's actually cutting total departures from Newark, but if they are trimming things down to more reasonable numbers, it's going to be they're going to cut the ones that they never really planned to operate anyways.
Yeah. What about this open skies battle? Supposedly it's over.
Hooray!
Woohoo! And this is between the U.S. major carriers, the ME3, the Middle East 3, and Norwegian, correct?
The Norwegian thing is sort of a side story, but yes, all of those all got resolved last week, apparently. The official announcement for the Middle East stuff hasn't come out. We're recording this on Saturday over the weekend. And so it hasn't been officially announced yet, but enough people are talking about it that it's presumed what the details of the deal are. And essentially, the Middle East carriers, and it may just be Etihad and Emirates. It's unclear because Qatar Airways sort of was negotiating separately, but they have agreed in theory to not add any more Fifth Freedom rights, flights out of Europe to the United States, and to use public commercial accounting procedures rather than whatever numbers they want. And it's not entirely clear why that necessarily changes everything, unless this is a stepping stone to then the U.S. or to the U.S. carriers eventually going back and saying, and see, look, they really are subsidized because the numbers don't line up. But for Etihad to agree to not launch service from Europe to North America right now is pretty easy, given that they're losing a ton of cash and deferring aircraft deliveries and are restructuring aircraft orders and all the other problems they're having. Like, it's got to be pretty easy for them to say, okay, we won't do anything like that for a couple of years. We'll wait it out. If it doesn't actually change, right? It seems to me like it's an agreement to not do anything, to not do things that they weren't doing anyways.
I mean, my thought on this is, why would you want to start competing transatlantic right now to Europe? I mean, there's so much competition between the Icelandic carriers and Norwegian and Level and June and all this other crap that it's not the place where you're going to make money.
And more low-cost carriers launch every year.
Exactly. Primarily. So I don't think they've really given much up by saying that, because they let some of these carriers thin themselves out, and then you reassess what you want to do.
Yeah, and apparently it's also like a side letter, not a formal part of the agreement, is what I'm reading. And we'll see, you know, when it's actually announced and whatever, what comes of it. But it's one of those things that it may not actually even really matter.
And then the question I would pose is, like, Newark-Athens is a great example. You know, United bitched and moaned when they launched it, but United only flies there for 4 months a year. Why do they care so much? I mean, they're filling in a gap. You know, Emirates came in and filled in the gap, and yet everyone else was up in arms when no one really flies to Athens outside the summer season.
Because United felt that it should be its joint venture was going to push that traffic through Munich and Frankfurt.
Oh, and we've been managing airlines for how long? And we know that business travelers and a lot of people like nonstops? Like, what are we, like in kindergarten for revenue management and route planning?
It's route planning 101 to you, good sir.
I think it's route planning negative 101.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just, you asked what they're thinking.
And I completely understand. I know you're not disagreeing with me. I'm just like, it makes no sense. And I don't even know why people bought into the argument or the defense that they posed.
Yeah, it's stupid. It's all stupid. Anyway, it's fine. But the Norwegian half of the story is also tied to Open Skies Treaty and whatnot. And when the, was it Norwegian Air International? Whichever one of the Irish version of Norwegian is, was granted its access to the U.S., which happened last year, and they finally started flying the 737s to the random small cities in New England and all that stuff. There were four U.S. airline union groups protested that, and they were still fighting it in court, and they finally lost that case. So we'll have to see if they continue to pursue it or what. But right now it seems like Norwegian's going to be able to continue its operations such as they are, which, you know, is always a crapshoot on whether the 787s will make it to their destinations or be delayed massively. Foz, we've talked about the Rolls-Royce engine stuff a lot, and you and I have talked a few times about how is Norwegian not so affected.
Yep.
They are.
Yeah, yeah, I saw that they've subleased two 777s for Newark-Barcelona and Newark-Paris now.
Yeah, and just even beyond that, I've been stalking my inbound for a flight on Sunday evening, and the flight from Oslo to Fort Lauderdale on Saturday is 13 hours delayed right now, and they're blaming Rolls-Royce engine inspections for that.
Lovely.
And they put that in, like, the message to passengers as though that's going to get them out of paying the EU 261, and I'm pretty sure it won't, but, you know, good luck.
Hey, having to inspect your engines is an act of God.
Right.
Speaking of Mexico City, since I talked about it a little bit earlier, I should have brought this topic up next. Emirates is not going to serve Mexico City via, I think it was Madrid, right?
Barcelona.
They were going to do Dubai, Barcelona, Mexico City, and they've dropped that plan. So I don't think they're going to operate at Mexico City at all now.
Dropped is a relative term.
They never started it.
Well, I was going to say they were told not to. They applied for the route authorities. They can't. So it's, long story short, they can't fly from Mexico City all the way to Dubai because Mexico City is too high, so they can't get a plane off the ground with full fuel load there.
Yep.
Sufficient fuel load to make it all the way back. And so it had to stop somewhere. And Barcelona was the most recent choice. They got the Spanish authorities granted the Fifth Freedom rights so they could fly passengers just between Barcelona and Mexico City. The Mexican authorities were assumed, it was assumed that the Mexican authorities would similarly approve it, and the Mexicans said, maybe not. Hmm. And seems to be based a lot on that they want Aeromexico to resume that service instead.
To Barcelona.
So it's a little protectionist.
Hmm. A little NIMBYism.
Yeah. So considering the, you know, I'm looking at it almost as a Fifth Freedom spillover sort of from the U.S. If the U.S. can say no, maybe so can we.
Mm, yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. But I don't know.
Last topic, and then we can jump into something else if we have a little bit extra time. LATAM has launched a new rewards program, MultiPlus. We have no details, right, Foz?
I just got an email saying my points are safe and there's a new program.
They haven't been smuggled out of the country, so you're good.
Not yet.
Sure. Yeah. This is happening has been around for a little while. I've gotten some of those emails as well. I assume it's mostly bad news, but I don't have any details either. I just can't get excited about it.
Well, and since we don't have any more news, we can talk about United's potential buying options. They're looking to replace the 767s at some point, no date given. And the rumors are they're looking at the 787s and A330neos.
I mean, other than a fire sale, why would anyone buy a 330neo?
Your Delta? I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's a compelling reason for United. I think it's a lot more stage length than they need, right? I think it's got more range than they need and capacity.
Yeah. I mean, for the 763s, I mean, it opens up some things in that it lets them do West Coast to Europe beyond London.
Yeah.
So they, you know, some of the other things they wouldn't have to tie a 78 to.
Yep.
But as a whole, it seems too much plane.
What do you think, Seth?
I think having seen Americans say, why would we, you know, dropping their A330, A350 order and doubling down on the 787, I think that's a huge opening for United to do the same. I think that it gives an example of sort of structure by which Boeing can sell a shit ton more 787s and drop the price to a reasonable level and keep that running and even potentially build in a NMA/797 transition option.
Yep.
Right. But my whole theory on the American deal and all these, you know, that Boeing is running late essentially on something to replace these planes has been if they just start selling 787s, the 787s are also more plane than these routes need from a range perspective. They're smaller capacity, but that, you know, arguably like for like, the Dash 8 is a little smaller than the 800 and the Dash 9 is a little smaller than the 900 capacity wise, if I remember correctly.
It also gives them some sort of fleet commonality so they don't have to open up additional bases.
Right, but the fleet commonality is huge at this point for United. Like, yep. And this is sort of is the same thing of why Doug Parker said having 20 of these planes doesn't make any sense. Now, the United deal, they have way more than 2767, so the replacement could potentially be enough to justify, you know, if you buy 50 of them, that's enough to justify a new fleet type. But if you just add it on to the, you know, 50 you already have, that's better.
Who makes the 330neo engines?
I think that was Rolls.
Yeah, that's another reason not to even consider that.
Especially when you have a fleet of 787s that are on GEs.
Well, I mean, think about it. The only Rolls-Royce engines United has is the RB211s on the 757s, and that's the only good engine Rolls-Royce has ever made.
Yeah, it's the Trent 7000.
Yeah.
Which is a version of the Trent 1000 used on the 77-10 and is exclusive.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think, and that's part of the problems with the 330neos, I bet, is the engine type.
Interesting times, fellas. Interesting times. Anything else you guys want to talk about?
Yeah, the only other thing I would throw out there, I mean, I know the story made the rounds again in the past couple of weeks about this Boeing or the United shopping. United clearly has been shopping this stuff for a long time. Maybe they're closer to getting to a conclusion now, but it's not a surprise that these conversations are happening. I have a hard time seeing this as like, oh, yeah, we're ready to do a new order all of a sudden, as opposed to, yeah, you know, we'll get there when we get there. It's right. If you're United, there's no need to commit right now. And if you're Boeing, I can understand wanting to go to Farnborough and have a big order to announce.
Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense, right? This is sort of a who needs it more kind of situation. United clearly doesn't need to announce that it's going to spend X billions of dollars, even if it's 10 years from now. But Boeing would love to be able to get an order on the books and have something secured to, you know, be impressive at the air show this summer. So that's mid-July, 2 months from now. Maybe we'll know something more.
Yep.
Well, I'd like to make a prophecy here, which is United will order new planes and Delta will buy their 763s.
Oh, man.
Wow. See, Delta's is going to switch to the 30-plus category as opposed to the 20-plus-year-old aircraft?
But lines up with the flight attendants.
They're gonna get walkers for the airplanes. Oh.
Historic license plates. It's the old Northwest blood.
Oh, man. Classic. It's a classic car.
Collectibles license plate.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't even need good fuel economy when you have one of those on there.
Hey, less for registration that way.
With that, I think we're done. So if you'd like to follow us on Twitter, we're at dotslines, moredotsmorelines.com. Leave us a comment. We love hearing from you. We have a couple of Patreon comments that we need to go through and talk about on the show. And so we'll do that next time. And then I think we're going to have some giveaways coming up soon. So stay tuned for that. And thanks for listening, and happy travels. Bye-bye.
See ya.